It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here with lots of news from Microsoft, including we're going to have an interesting conversation about a job listing that Microsoft posted that implies they're going to change the way they develop software. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 609 for Wednesday, February 20th, 2019. Use the inner source. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Sophos Cybersecurity. In an age of evolving cyber threats, you need evolved cybersecurity. Powered by artificial intelligence, Sophos can detect threats before they strike, killing ransomware, viruses, and other cyber threats dead in their tracks. Get a free security scan or a free trial today at Sophos.com. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft, starring the Microsoft journalistic legends. There's no Nobel Prize. There's a Pulitzer in it. I don't know. Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com, her ZDNet home. Hello, Mary Jo.
Hello.
We're starting early. Not for them. It's noon. But for me, it's early. I don't usually get up before noon. Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Leo.
Hello. We're starting a little early today for those watching the live stream because in a couple of hours we're going to go to a Samsung event and find out all about something we already know all about, which is the Galaxy S10. Amazing.
A little strange, huh?
Amazing. Yeah. So, let's see here. I like the title, Use the Inner Source, Luke. This must be a Mary Jo Foley.
It's my story, but not my title. That's all Mr. Thurrott.
Tell us what it means.
Okay. So I was trolling around in the Microsoft career site, as I am wont to do.
Yes, she does. Yeah.
And I found some interesting job links for a new team that Microsoft's creating internally to bring inner source development across the company internally. So inner source, I didn't really know that much about. I started researching it.
Never heard that term.
See, I was positive you would have heard of this. That's interesting.
No. Yeah. So inner source is when you take open source development principles, but you apply them inside an organization. So it's not like you're open sourcing anything, but you're taking the idea of code reuse and code testing.
Is that because it works so well in open source? Honestly, that's
my point. But we'll get
the idealistic goals of open source.
I support, but often creating, open source projects descend into bickering. And you could think of many even recent examples where people have gone off in a huff. I guess
you can't
do that.
Well, we know some people. Yeah. No, but the idealistic goals, the cathedral and bazaar type open source, right? Okay. You know, the idea that you can create code branches, everything happens transparently, documentation is better because everyone's contributing and you can see actually what's going on when people are developing things, which is very, so that's very anti how Microsoft does things. Not every team at Microsoft, but most teams have been very secretive, I feel like. So this is a bootstrapped effort inside the One Engineering System org at Microsoft, which is the org that's trying to bring all the different engineering teams across the different divisions together. And according to this job description, they're going to use GitHub, as you would expect, and they're going to try to get all the teams in different divisions to start doing these more open source-like things so that they can share code across projects, share their documentation, be more open about what's going on when they're developing different projects. I say, let's see, because some teams have been...
You're so much kinder than I am.
No, you know what? Some teams have done this at Microsoft. How about Visual Studio Code, I feel like, is an example of a project that probably is pretty much run like this right now.
But Visual Studio Code is also a very tiny project compared to, say, something like Visual Studio or Office or Windows or...
Yeah. No, so, you know, it's a journey, Paul. We've heard that from Microsoft. It's a journey.
The journey is no reward, Mary Jo. I don't know. I see this kind of cynically. I I think of this in the terms of Microsoft's history. You know, Steve Ballmer infamously described Linux as cancer. And this is like the cancer taking over the patient, right? Because Microsoft's got it pretty bad these days when it comes to open source. And also, if you want, speaking of history, I referenced the embrace and extend. And I've often made the joke that Microsoft today is just embrace without extend. But in many ways, this is open source embracing and extending Microsoft, which is the ultimate irony if you know anything about the history of this company.
Yeah.
Because this is the religious part of open source that they're embracing, right? It's the methodology, right? To use I guess a less political word or whatever. But I don't know. I view this as this train racing down the track, and there's no stop to the stupidity, and there's no, you know, there's just a, if you can't agree that what we're doing is perfect, you're not part of the thing anymore, you know? Mm. And I worry about this kind of mentality, not because the ideals of inner source, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of, are not good, but I look at what they describe in GitHub specifically. Mm-hmm. And I think to myself, Microsoft is the most successful, the biggest software maker on earth. They have solved these problems at scale. They have already.
I mean, I think there's room for improvement, right?
There always is room for improvement.
Yeah. Like, I feel like some of the teams have been better at doing these kinds of things than others, like we said, Visual Studio Code. But also, think if some of the teams could have shared their best practices, like Office bringing things cross-platform. What if they could have shared some of that with other teams at Microsoft? Maybe that would have shortened the cycle of them doing something like that.
Yeah, in the past. But I mean, today you could kind of make the argument that Microsoft has in recent years made many efforts to bring things together. There's the one Windows Core thing that brought together the phone, which doesn't exist anymore, I know, but Xbox and HoloLens and Surface Hub and also Windows 10 PCs, obviously. There's Microsoft 365, which is an effort to tie together Windows and Office 365 and the management services. Not just from a sort of functional integration standpoint, but from a servicing perspective, from a release schedule perspective. So I obviously there are good ideas in there. They're great ideas for a company that's never done anything before. You know, for Microsoft, I sort of think, well, they've already been very successful doing what they do. This just kind of reeks of the, you know, it's the new Microsoft versus old Microsoft thing. And at some point, I know I kind of joke about it, but I'm legitimately a little bit concerned about it too, where I kind of don't recognize this company anymore, you know?
Yeah.
I think back to when I started doing this 25 years ago and how they were at that time, the things I liked and didn't like about Microsoft, you know, whatever, how the intervening 25 years have gone and so forth, how the company's changed, right? I mean, this company today, We're almost to the point where it literally bears no resemblance at all to the Microsoft that I, you know,
it's true.
I've kind of built a career around.
I agree with you 100% on that. And I've been doing it like you have for decades. And
yeah,
I mean, we talk about, you know, I've brought this up on the show a couple of times. I remember calling different teams at Microsoft over the years and saying, hey, do you know the Office team is doing blah? And they're like, no, they're not. And I'm like, yeah, they are. And then they went over and were like, hey, you guys doing this? Yeah, they are. Oh, what? I'm like, how did you not know that? Like, it's going to impact what's going on with Windows and Internet Explorer. And like, why? How do you guys not know this? But the old culture of Microsoft was, and in some parts still is, secrecy is the best way. And until pretty recently, even pitting teams inside one org against each other and made the best project win. Still,
you know, you know what company is exactly like that today, by the way, is Apple. And Apple operates under a veil of secrecy that I don't think even Microsoft ever achieved. And obviously they have some problems right now, but they are also the biggest company on earth, too. I mean,
right.
You know, I want to be clear here. I don't mean to say that this inner source thing is nonsense, that what they're doing is stupid. It's more I see this as another step in this direction that I'm unsure of. And I feel like I think the bigger problem, how can I explain this? It's a little bit like the accessibility stuff, you know, where it's accessibility at all costs, you know, where if we just add an accessibility feature, it is by definition positive and necessary and right. Whereas I've argued that some of the things they've done are, you know, crazy and don't make any sense. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like that because you are instantly branded. If you ever complain about something like that, you're seen as some kind of a crazy person, right?
Right.
But I'm just asking questions. I mean, I know.
I agree with you. I mean, we talk privately among ourselves about like the whole, you have to be politically correct now and say certain things certain ways and be all in on the growth mindset or you're out, you know. And this is to some extent part of that, right? It's like the kinder, gentler, more open, more sharing company.
I don't think Apple's any less cult-like. I mean,
Oh, no. If anything, they're more cult-like.
I think that...
No, but that's unhealthy. That aspect of it is.
Oh, I agree, but that's separate from the kind of development environment you espouse. That's something else. That's another issue with corporate culture, is the cult-like issue.
I think
Apple, when you say Apple does, you know, kind of more secret development, they're more monolithic in a way in their in their goal. Microsoft's a much more diverse company.
It is.
When they say inner source, are they saying across the board with everything they do?
They're saying within the one engineering system or service that they're building, which is, as far as I understand it, it's not every single product, because I don't think like Surface would be part of this. I don't think hardware or anything consumer-based.
Would it be all software?
I think so.
See, I think that's not a bad thing. Especially, it's an antidote, isn't it, to the problem Microsoft, you know, historically has. You kind of alluded to it, where you got all the different divisions. Yeah. That's a famous org chart where they're all shooting at each other.
By the way, that was Microsoft during the Steven Sinofsky era, right? And in some dark alternate future where he took over the company and would have driven the whole thing into the ground instead of just Windows. You know, that's how that company would have operated for sure. And it did in many ways operate. No, that's not the right approach. I mean, you know, any comparison with Apple is not going to be perfect. They are different companies. And like you said, Microsoft's a more diverse company in the sense that they have many, many more businesses. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you think about the secretive development of the iPhone or the car project that they've been working on or not working on because no one really talks about it, that's done in secrecy from the people within the company, right? The people inside Apple knew less about that than people on the outside. And there was absolutely some of that with Microsoft for sure. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm trying to say is, it's a hard thing to explain, but I feel like at Microsoft, like I said, you're either on board or you're not. And I feel like there's a healthier conversation that should be happening with any decision, not just we have to do this because this is what we're doing, you know? And I worry about this mentality because you're kind of railroading the company. I don't know why I keep using train metaphors, but you're, you know, you're moving in this direction and I feel like it's without any debate, you know, or any discussion at all.
Well, and it'll be anyone
who
brings
anyone who says anything is like, you're out.
Well, that's called leadership. I mean, maybe they had internal discussion. You kind of have to say at some point, hey, you know, this is what we've decided on and everybody needs to get on board, right?
I don't think that's bad. No, the job description for this main role for this too says, you know, your job is going to be basically selling this idea to the product teams. You're going to go to them and say, hey, you know what we want you to do?
Remind me not to apply for that job.
I mean, this is how, you know, dictatorships function, right? What do you mean you don't like the idea? Have you ever heard of the gulag we have?
You will cooperate.
This,
a couple
here's
of credits.
Another interesting, no, here's another kind of telling an interesting piece. So the way I found this first job posting was there's somebody who works at Microsoft who tweeted, hey, did you guys see this job post? And then he said, Gianluca Rebellino will be heading up this new inner source initiative. So I'm like, who's that guy? And I looked him up and he was one of the main guys behind the Microsoft Open Source Technologies subsidiary for years at Microsoft. So I'm like, okay, so this is interesting.
I kind of think this is great. I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, just a couple of credits before we go too much farther. The term inner source was coined by Tim O'Reilly.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. Who is a writer and thinker, obviously, about all this stuff and publishes the O'Reilly books. And the famous org chart is from Bonkers World. And I'm very proud to say that I have a autographed copy of that org chart hanging on my wall.
That's amazing.
At home. He did a custom
exactly
version
right.
for me. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mary Jo.
No, that was all I was going to say is it seems like there's a definite group of people, probably many of them inspired by GitHub or from GitHub even, who are saying, you know what, now we own GitHub. Let's get everybody to use GitHub and do things the GitHub way.
I like that. I mean, and I like that in the sense that Microsoft's various engineering teams should all be using the same systems, you know?
Yeah.
That makes tons of sense.
It does.
I want to be really clear about this because I'm not saying it's wrong or bad. I'm just saying, you know, we've had so much of this kind of kumbaya stuff under Satya Nadella. It's like, seriously, at some point, I feel like I'm losing track of the script
here. The old bloodthirsty Microsoft, is that it?
Well, by the way, it is a company that competes with other companies. They're supposed to be that way.
It
right?
is. And you know what? It's way more fun to write about that too, isn't it? Like,
and the kumbaya version of Microsoft.
Everyone's a winner, Leo. Everyone.
I feel like it's way more fun to write about Office fighting against Windows than everyone's contributing code into GitHub and sharing ideas.
But, here's a couple of things. I think it's easier to get new developers to come into that because a lot of people grew up in that environment. I think it probably is a better development platform. That's the whole theory behind this, is that you'll get better code. And haven't we been saying Microsoft has to fix its systems? I mean,
we're going to talk about that in about 10 seconds.
Okay.
So we have the next story. I'm going to highlight that exact problem.
I think this is it kind of makes sense in light of all the other things Microsoft has been doing. Right?
I agree with completely. It's certainly consistent. With the Microsoft that has evolved before our eyes over the past, 5 years?
Wikipedia has a good Inner Source article, and it talks about the key factors, and it actually kind of makes a lot of sense. I don't think it's necessarily not competitive.
Does it make sense like wearing white sneakers and laying down in a bunker?
No, it's not drinking the Kool-Aid sense. Things like coordination and leadership to support the emergence of an internal meritocracy. That's as opposed to the stacking system that they used to use. Remember that?
Stack ranking.
You would basically cut the throat of your colleague. You know, this survivor.
That's exactly
version.
How I play Call of Duty. I'm sorry, that makes sense.
That's why you don't like this.
We are teammates in word only.
Transparency to open up the organization, another tenant. Management support and motivation to involve people. I don't know. I understand Paul is not new agey, for Christ's sake. He's from Boston. But but we in California, Paul.
Yeah. I see how this is going, Leo.
Embrace.
I see what's happening here.
Kumbaya feelings. Just
get the prayer circle and shut up.
Get your feelings out, Paul. Let them out. You've got a lot of negativity in there.
Yes, I do. That's true. It's true.
And you're keeping it, damn it.
I think we both just have covered them so long. It's hard to believe that they could ever change completely from the company.
Look what's happened in 5 years.
It's unfathomable. I feel like everything like this, every time one of these types of things happen, and there have been many of these stories where all of a sudden Microsoft's doing this completely different thing. I just always think back like, but this company, I know the world's changed, right? We know that the Microsoft's never going to dominate personal computing the way that it once did, right? And we know that there's really no chance it can do this again in any new market. There's no, the world, I've often said, actually, to be fair to myself, open always wins in the end. There's no doubt about it.
That's right. This is it, Paul.
I know, but it's the process that's so
come into the light, Paul. It's good in here.
Now, I think Leo hit on a point. Like, if you're a younger, newer, more recently trained developer, I think you expect this is the way developers.
I agree with that
works completely.
That's true.
And you're not like, wait a minute, why doesn't Office talk to Windows? What's up with that, guys? Instead, you're like, hey, aren't we all using GitHub together?
Well. I'm sure for a recently graduated developer type coming to a company like Microsoft that has source code bases that date back literally decades, that the Windows source code, the Office source code, that kind of stuff must look like COBOL to them. You know, exactly. It must be the most horrible, ancient, you know, monolithic, just crazy source code. It has to be terrible. It also makes a lot of money.
Well, exactly. It did. And
well, it still does,
I
really.
Think Satya, see, this me, this is an example of a company doing the hardest thing, a turn that most companies fail to make. You know, they go off the road.
That's true.
And it's amazing, really, that Microsoft.
It is amazing. And if you want to make another Apple comparison, I mean, Apple right now is known to be trying to make this kind of a pivot. They understand that the iPhone phenomena is over and that it's still big, but they need to find this next big thing. But the thing that Apple is at a disadvantage for right now, where Microsoft has found a way around this, is their services business is entirely reliant on the iPhone being a thing. If the iPhone didn't exist, the services business disappears. And that's what they're kind of basing the future of the company on. Microsoft has diversified itself much more, and it's used starting points in legacy code base from Windows and Office and, you know, Server. And it's a great achievement. It's something that will be studied in the future. There's no doubt about it. You know, Windows could fail right now if it had to, and the rest of Microsoft would keep churning along, right? Yeah. Azure does not rely on there being a Windows client business.
This is great. I think this is great.
I think it's different, and I am leery of this change.
And tomorrow they're going to announce it. From now on, everything will be written in Erlang.
Exactly.
Scala.
C-sharp.
O-camel. It's all in
O-camel. How do you make a noose? Can I make a noose out of paper tape?
They do have a very nice functional platform in F-sharp. And TypeScript
yeah,
is
that's
pretty
true.
Cool.
Right.
TypeScript.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like they dabble in all of this stuff. So those are two good examples of these things that are kind of on the periphery. They're two examples of many, many programming languages and methodologies. And, you know, it's I don't know that they've made a big difference there, you know, honestly. I mean, a broader world of software development with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
As technically excellent as it is. Yeah,
I agree. Like, there are TypeScript projects, many inside and some outside Microsoft, but it's not something as huge as like C Sharp.
Is C Sharp the dominant platform now in Microsoft?
I would say, I yes. So. Yeah.
That's not a bad choice. It's a C++.
Yeah, well, yeah, you kind of wonder why it isn't TypeScript or JavaScript. I mean, the biggest news, or the most often that I see something TypeScript related, it's about interoperating TypeScript with something that was JavaScript based, you know, it's like, look, TypeScript works with, you know, whatever it is, which is fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with it, but I don't, the company's not pivoting its software development around TypeScript anytime soon.
Right.
Well,
I'm just going to eat some ice cream.
he needs his little therapy session here, which we've helped with.
I think this is interesting. I agree with Paul though. It could go horribly wrong, too.
It could,
and we've certainly seen many open source projects. I mean, one of the problems with open source projects is the flat hierarchy. And then you often have dictator for life leaders who sometimes, like Linus Torvalds, are quite prickly. And so there's all sorts of ways it can go wrong. But
there's a complexity to Microsoft, too, right, structurally or organizationally. It's such a huge company. Like you said, it's very diverse, which it is. And their organizational structure is multi-tiered, you know. They've started inventing new titles so they can have people that are above certain kinds of vice presidents now. And, you know, this is another problem for Microsoft. It is a big, big company. Yeah. And in some ways, I don't mean this to sound like an antitrust thing, but you could almost make the case today that splitting Microsoft up into logical units that are not codependent, because they aren't anyway, in many cases, would make some sense just to make them leaner, more agile companies.
Yeah. It's an interesting project.
Yeah.
It is.
And it may,
the baby bills, as we call them.
We're building quite an edifice based on one job listing, but I think
No, there's Leo, some related listen,
it's
ones,
been a slow
too.
News week.
Yeah, and there are other job listings in there that reflect back to this. Okay. So, yeah.
It would make
I
a
obsess
lot of sense.
Over this kind of thing. You don't understand how awful it is being me. When I see something like this, it is just destructive, you know?
Oh, come on.
He goes into a corner. He hides for a while.
Actually,
whimpers.
Is it? Would you agree that the biggest challenge for companies like Microsoft, Facebook, Google, Apple is attracting the best young engineers?
Mm-hmm.
If you stipulate that, then this would make a lot of sense because mm-hmm. this is what that group of it's the same reason Microsoft looks like a college campus. So you're going to try to make an environment, whether it's genuine or not. I mean, it's not a college right. campus. You're going to try to make an environment that the best young engineers will want to work in.
Right.
Yeah, it's familiar, for sure.
Yeah. So I can understand.
And they're used to traffic from the Bay Area, so they're all set.
Yep.
Windows 10, 20, H1, 20.
Yeah.
H1. Get that in your head. 20.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, get it in your head because they still haven't shipped 19H1 or 19H2.
Yep.
But what are they working on? What is the deal?
So this was a big surprise last week. When they dropped the newest insider build, they said it's from our 20H1 development branch. And everybody's like, wait, what? Like, we're still over here
on
19H3.
Microsoft has never publicly mentioned 20H1 ever, once.
They have not.
And also to explain to those who don't understand Microsoft's arcane naming conventions, 20 mm-hmm. is 2020 first half. 20H1 is the first half of.
That's right. So
they're still having trouble deploying the previous release.
Right.
Which they didn't call this, but it was 1809, which is like we could call it 18H2, right? Still only on barely double digit percentage of Windows 10 PCs. Still haven't wound down 19H1. Still have not discussed anything about 19H2 other than that it is still happening and will happen in the second half of this year.
Welcome to Inner Source, Paul. Multiple projects on parallel tracks.
So, we know they're always building ahead. Like, we know that they're working on future branches. That's not a surprise that they have a 20H1. It's a surprise that they showed anything that they consider part of that development branch yet.
Yeah, right.
And the reason they gave was so vague, right? They said, I'm looking for the exact wording. It was so strange.
It's just two sentences they mentioned 20H1.
We are working on in 20H1 require a longer lead time. They didn't say what the things are or say anything about that, but that's all they said. And people said, okay, so I asked Brandon LeBlanc, I said, so is this different at all from the code that's in 19H1, like the stuff people are testing now? And he said, no, it's the same set of features, except for this mystery stuff they're testing.
So what does this remind you of, Mary Jo?
A lot of things.
But most recently, 1 week ago, we had a discussion just like this about the last build of 19H1, where it had unspecified gaming technology into it. We need you to test this thing. We're not telling you what this thing is. And it's just something we're doing. And, it's this kind of lack of transparency that I find troubling because, if you look at the recent history of Microsoft, we just talked about Steven Sinofsky. This is the type of thing that Sinofsky used to do, right? You're going to test this thing. We're not going to tell you what it is. And we're just going to gather feedback in the background. And you don't have to worry about it. And, when Terry Morrison came in, his first edict basically was we're going to reverse all of that. We're going to develop Windows in the open, John Cable or whoever a couple months ago with the problems with 1809, was saying we're going to be more transparent about what we're doing going forward and how we're going to fix these problems with the methodology we have for finding problems in Windows 10 and so forth. There's been nothing along those lines at all. And all of a sudden, this company is, this part of this company anyway, is getting more vague.
So let's guess why they did it, though. I think we have some semi-educated or maybe totally crazy guesses about what's going on, right?
Yep.
So one possibility is something in 19H2 could be very secret. Okay. And that's why they're not showing any code from the next subsequent branch early. Like there might be something in there that if they show us, we'll be like, oh, look, there's whatever. Windows Core operating system or something, right?
I mean, wouldn't we see it though? I mean, you know, it seems like the type Walking Cat or Raphael, somebody would have looked at this and said, oh, here's where it's different.
Yep.
This is a hint.
Right. Or it could be they're lining up some new way of doing their insider testing. Like what if 19H2 builds only go to the fast ring and then, I mean, sorry, H2 builds only go to the fast ring, but H1 builds go to skip ahead. Like what if they start dividing it like that?
Yep. And that's fine. Right. That's fine. I don't see why they would have to do it today instead of, you know, a month from now, but that's fine. Yep. I like the theory that you were the one, by the way, I know you know, but to give you credit, that sometime in the past, during one of our many complaint sessions about Windows as a service and how this thing doesn't work, you know, I kind of came out and said, look, they should just do one release a year. And you said, you know, they can do two a year, but make it like the R2 model where one is a major release and one is a minor release. Mm-hmm. We've kind of established that in the scheme of Windows 10 today. The builder, the version they're currently working on, which is 19H1, is a major release.
Yep.
And by testing 20H1 this far in advance, it suggests that it too will be a major release because they said literally, one of the few things they said was, there's just some stuff in there that we need to get testing early. That suggests a big change to me. Mm-hmm. Whereas 19H2, which is still happening, that they've said they're not going to skip it, would fall into kind of a minor release.
It could be like the cleanup release, right? Like, so say you come out with this big release in H1 and then H2 is, okay, let's clean that up and just do some fit and finish and not introduce any big
features. I like that idea a lot. And there are a lot of reasons to like that idea. But the biggest one is that the current release schedule doesn't make a lot of sense for PC release schedules, right? Mm-hmm. So you have one coming out in the spring, March, April, and then you've got one coming out in really October. And not really being deployed to a lot of PCs if everything goes well until December. Yeah. That means you're missing the holiday and back to school windows.
True.
Those, I mean, you know, and when you do that, you have people who buy a new PC and then immediately have to install a major upgrade in many cases, especially if it's done over the holidays.
That's true.
That's a terrible experience to give someone who just bought a new computer. One of the great things about Windows 10 is that unless there is a major release out there, that when you would bring it up for the first time and you check for updates, you usually will have a cumulative update of some kind, you know, a Defender update of some kind, one or two other small things like a Adobe or some kind of security thing or whatever it is. You install them, you reboot, you're done. It's really nice. But when you throw a major feature update into there, that's a version upgrade. It's a huge process. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous.
There's another thing that makes sense about this big release, small release idea is Microsoft changed the length of time they're supporting the H2 releases. They extended it to 30 months, right? And so if you think about that, that's the release you want to be more stable, the one that you support for 30 months instead of 18 months.
Yep.
So again, this fits into the idea maybe it is a big release, small release thing, and they just haven't announced it. Maybe they're trying to wait till build to announce it.
Right. I guess build is technically about 2 months off from when they did this, but it's still the timing of this is so weird.
It is weird.
This is a product that 1 year from today will not be finalized, you know, so they somehow felt that they needed that full year to test something. We don't know what it is.
You know? I think it's Longhorn.
It's Cairo.
I think it's Cairo.
Cairo.
Yeah. We're finally going to get that SQL-based file system.
We are, finally. Finally.
Finally.
Yeah.
And then I can retire. That's all I've ever wanted. That's really all I was waiting for.
So we don't know why, but people are starting to test 20H1. And if you do agree to test it, if you take it as a skip-ahead tester, you can't go back.
Oh, wow.
Like, once you take it, you can't go back.
That does imply that it's something like file system level, right? I mean...
Yeah, right.
Like core, core. Right? Yeah. It's going to be some core level.
I wonder if it isn't related to these new Windows versions we're hearing about, right? Windows Lite or whatever that's called. And that it may be some new, I don't know, whatever they're calling Windows Core these days, where they have to recomponentize the system in a slightly different way or whatever, but it's going to cause major changes to the underpinnings, and it's almost like a different thing. I don't know. We can only speculate, but they've never done this before, for sure.
No.
It's a new drivetrain.
I think it's inner source related. It's they're gonna replace the file system with a Linux file system.
This is good. This keeps us full employment. That's good.
Yeah, that's it. I need to have that kind of an outlook. That's very
it's good.
It's very positive of you.
Good.
Yeah,
it's all good. And then Paul must have written this. Seriously, Microsoft, it's like you're screwing with us now. That's a Paul.
The issue that I have with this, I assume, is fairly obvious, right? This is a company that spent last year not releasing new versions of Windows 10 in any reliable fashion whatsoever. And now they're working on 3 versions. And it's like, guys, I mean, I given what happened last year, the normal response to that, especially since they've kind of come out and said, we're going to address this, would have been to say, you know what? We're going to skip 19H2. We're going to make 19H1 take a little longer. We're going to make sure we get it right. We're going to spend the rest of the year.
I think that'd be a welcome thing if they said that.
That's what I'm saying. That's what they should have done. No, they didn't. They're like, no, we're going to develop 3 at the same time. We're still doing 19H2. Don't worry about it. We're not going to talk about
it's
it
like
yet.
A we'll juggler get to that. That says, all right, throw me the chainsaw.
Yeah.
But I think, one of the central promises of Windows 10, and I guess this is one of those things, especially as they started extending the support life cycles out, which was inevitable. We should have seen this coming.
Yeah.
The central promise from a serviceability standpoint was, it's better for everyone if everyone is using the same version of Windows. Microsoft only has to develop one patch, one version of a patch. It sounds like this utopian future. Whereas today, if you think about it, they're supporting Windows 7, Windows 8.1, and Windows 10. But they're really not. They're supporting many versions of Windows 10, all of which are new versions of Windows, different and require different versions of all those patches. Because of the number of Windows 10 versions that they support, even if Windows 7 and 8.1 disappear today, Microsoft will be supporting more versions of Windows than they have at any time in its history.
Yeah.
And this is the exact opposite of the promise, of the purpose of rallying around a single version of Windows. Mm.
Seedorf17 in our chat room says, I got skip ahead build 18836 and it screwed up my Azure Active Directory login and I had to reset the PC. So now I have a skip ahead build but can't get back into the skip ahead ring.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Because you can't re-enroll. Nice. So what he's going to have to do, unfortunately, is download the ISO from Microsoft for the shipping version of Windows.
Start over.
Start over from scratch. No, but this to be fair to Microsoft, well, they do, it is a one-way street with skip ahead. That's kind of tough because the enrollment period is defined, and it's if you screw it up, you can't get back
in.
But
I think if you do that, you should really understand what you're doing. I mean,
I would hope that everyone in the Insider program understands that even on the fast ring, I mean, you can halt new builds, but you're stuck on that thing. When the shipping version happens, you can upgrade then and get back on the regular update train. But, basically what you're looking at is resetting it with an ISO, not from the thing that's built in.
Right.
Because you have to go back to the supported version. I mean, I've done that a million times. I think hopefully anyone in the Insider program can handle that. And the backup that may require of data that hopefully is not only on that PC and all
data
the other
on a D issues. Drive. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm. You could do that too. But I mean, I always feel weird about that kind of nuke from orbit thing. Even when the data is on a different drive, you want to make sure it's backed up or disconnected or something. Don't ever make that mistake.
Don't play around.
Well, you're looking at a partition table during setup and you're like, which one was it again?
Oh God.
Or, sometimes it gets screwed up. Sometimes they reverse
true.
The order.
Yeah, that's true. Let's see here. We're going to get through with this show in about 10 minutes. I want to stretch it out a little bit.
There's not a lot happening
it's
right now
slow.
Because everything's waiting for different events to happen.
Well, let me do a shout out to our sponsor and, we will continue on with Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott and the early edition. I like that. Windows Weekly early edition. But first, a word from Sophos. We use Sophos here as our kind of intrusion detection system and as a barrier against the outside world. I think anybody in the cybersecurity business knows the name Sophos. What's interesting to me is, you know, it's always been this cat and mouse game between the bad guys and the good guys. They develop a technology. We develop a technology to defend ourselves. They come up with something else, back and forth, back and forth. Sophos has upped the ante here by introducing deep learning into their tools, advanced AI technology. It's a neural network, works like millions of connected neurons in the human brain, that interprets incoming data and can respond to threats much faster because it's like a brain recognizing new patterns as dangerous. And that's exactly what you need. Zero days are the ultimate threat in all cybersecurity. How do you fight zero days? Something you've never seen before. Deep learning. Sophos recently, thanks to this technology, ranked number one by an independent security test. SE Labs did it. You could look it up. Best protection ratings across the board for both large enterprises and small businesses. What I'm excited about, I find very interesting. You know, so if you're a business, obviously you know about Sophos. I hope you're using Sophos. Certainly we do. But they have now taken this deep learning technology and all the stuff they've learned from it, and they're making a premium version available for Macs and PCs. They call it Sophos Home. This is real-time protection that's so much better than any antivirus. From the latest ransomware attacks, malicious software, hacking attempts, it's very easy to use because it's cloud-based. That means you use a browser to configure it, to monitor it, to manage it. So you can it's not specific machine based. You can secure your own laptop, but also manage the security of multiple devices in your home network, but also around the world. You can protect relatives with this, which I think is really cool. Sign up for a single account, protect all the Macs and PCs in your home from a single console. Keep your relatives secure through the cloud, even if they're thousands of miles away. You can remotely manage their security, clean up threats, keep their systems safe. I think this is a really big advance in technology, and I want you to take a look at Sophos Home. Sophos tagline is security made simple. So don't think this is going to be some IT level, you know, enterprise level complicated console. It's powerful. You get the tools you need, but I think it's very easy to use. You log in from your browser. You start securing your systems today. So what's the bottom line? Whether you're a home user or an enterprise user, Sophos has you covered. Some of the largest businesses in the world use Sophos to stay protected from ransomware attacks. Stay secure. Third-party reviewers consistently rank Sophos among the best cybersecurity providers. And the synchronized security is awesome because it means you can manage all your Sophos products from a single cloud-based console. It's what we do here, and now you can do it at home. Get a free trial today. Or you know what? We've always told you this. This is a great place to go for a free security scan. Sophos, Sophos.com. Get the free security scan and check out Sophos Home while you're there. That's Sophos.com. We thank Sophos for their support. And now I've stalled enough. Maybe Paul and Mary Jo found more stories.
I found a guy who has another theory about what's going on with 20H1.
Oh, cool. What's okay. that?
Rick R. Podrick on Twitter. He said, What if Edge Chromium is the reason? It might be disruptive to separate the browser from Windows, and they could reintroduce sets too.
Oh, that's interesting. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. I think, you know, we might have kind of glossed around this topic last week or the week before because there's going to be a side-by-side thing going on with the Edge technologies and Windows, right? Yep. Because you've got the old version and the one that's coming. You know, they have to keep Edge HTML as it currently is in Windows 10 because so many apps rely on it. I'm sure over time there'll be new apps that use the new engine and old apps that are mm-hmm. updated for the new engine, but you always have to kind of keep those things side by side. When we talked to Richard last week, remember, you know, one of the things that kind of came up was just how strange it is that they announced this thing without necessarily having any idea if it could even work. I mean, I wonder if now that they've gone and started doing the work, they've arrived at some difficulties they didn't understand they were going to have. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's a good schedule for that.
Mm-hmm. So get Raphael on that. Make him dig around and see if there's something going on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, some kind of like there'll be like S. What are those folders like SXS or whatever, like the side by side. Code folders and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So kind of related to this, I was really surprised to see Microsoft released a Chrome extension.
Yeah. I'm actually a little surprised that that's what it requires, but because I, you know, obviously there's a timeline feature in Windows, and one of the cool things about it is you can get your activities from different machines. If you use certain apps or if you use the Microsoft Launcher on mobile, you can get timeline on your phone as well. And so it's kind of a neat way to pick up where you left off in either direction. That's cool. But of course, out of the box, it only works with Microsoft Edge, which, as we've established, very few people use, as far as browsers go, I should say. Yeah, so this is great. It not quite as alarming as the inner source thing, but yeah, Microsoft is releasing Chrome extensions. So why not? You know, I mean, pretty soon that will be an extension for their own browser anyway. So
yeah.
By the way, aren't we going to get a build? Do you think we'll get a build at 10 in a minute?
Yeah, I think we will.
Okay, Paul, install it in real time. At least so much fun.
Yep. Don't press install, Leo. Don't do it.
You're going to be able to browse your WSL file system with File Explorer in 19H1. I mean, that's really interesting. I've installed, you know, if you're using WSL, you're probably using a command line based thing like Ranger or something, but you could
see why you would want to do that.
Oh yeah, I mean, totally.
You know, my first reaction to that was they don't already do this, you know, because I kind of forgot. But
this is the Windows subsystem for Linux.
Since they released it, they've kind of gone back and forth on different ways to access things from one environment from the other, and you know, and vice versa. So you can use Linux command line to launch Windows applications, for example, and I presumably pipe into them and so forth. But yeah, this makes sense. I mean, not that the Linux file system must look like a nightmare in a graphical environment, but
it's very much like a Windows. In fact, I think you might argue it's vice versa, that the Linux file system makes more sense.
I don't mean the structure of it. I just mean
the files in there.
Yeah, they must have what do you call the configuration files in Linux must be all over the place.
No, that's Windows you're talking about.
It's Windows. It's like, very what do they call it, like any files or something? It's ridiculous.
No.
They have a registry. The system is stupid. anyway.
I mean, what you're used to, but
for sure.
It's an interesting idea. There are a lot more features for WSL now, right? There's a tighter integration in general, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's interesting.
So this feature showed up in the 20H1 skip ahead build, but Microsoft has said everything that showed up in that build is going back to 19H1 and 19H2. Right. So you'll see it.
Interesting. Yeah, because 19H1 is kind of winding down right now.
It is. Yep.
But yeah, I guess it's going to get in there. You know, in the past, we would have viewed this integration of Linux into Windows as a kind of embrace and extend kind of thing. Like you think this would give people the heebie-jeebies a little bit, given Microsoft's past. But I feel like this the Linux stuff in Windows has just, I think the people who need it love it, and it doesn't seem to have caused many waves.
I'm really curious who's using it, because if you use Linux, you use Linux. You're not using Windows.
Mm-hmm. Developers, you know, our web developer uses it. He was telling me that it saves him from having to use two different computers.
Yeah, right. So you stay in Windows, you're developing in Windows, but you need fgrep or something, and so you have
Linux tools to hit the server.
Yeah. Okay. I guess it makes sense. I mean, that's what I do on a Mac. And one of the reasons I like Mac OS is because I have the Mac OS, but I also have a terminal that gives me, you know, Unix commands as well.
I think this is what it gives. So, you know, Microsoft has gone progressively through, obviously, the command line stuff, the command prompt. There's the Jeffrey Snover, I almost called it Monad, PowerShell stuff, which I think was the final gasp of the old Microsoft, right? It's like, let's try to, we're going to outdo Unix, which was the entire point of NT in the beginning. But we're going to outdo the Unix command line, right? And so the way we're going to do it is using syntax that will be familiar to C# developers. There will be class-based libraries, right, which will have logical structures that you can kind of navigate through and figure out. You can query commands to see what the various options are. It's like all this advanced stuff. And for all that work, which is incredible, I think what they've arrived at the end was like, they just want
it's still
Linux.
Not Linux.
You know, like, yeah, it may be not as powerful. It may not be as sophisticated, you know, whatever, but
nobody wants to learn another tooling in another language. Yeah. That's really the bottom line.
Yeah.
As I think about it, I mean, that's exactly what I do. I'm learning Haskell right now, and the easiest way for me to do it is to use VS Code to edit the files and have a terminal command line open where the Haskell REPL is running, and it see and then it sees the changes. Like, I mean, it's a perfect symbiosis of, and it's a GUI editor and a terminal based command. So that makes perfect sense. So now I understand. I think about it, that makes a lot of sense.
I don't understand that environment, but I mean, I know that Visual Studio, you could run those commands from within
you
Visual
can. It
Studio.
It has a terminal have command.
It, yeah. It would so pop you, up in its own window.
Yeah, but it's still a terminal. It's still a command line.
Yeah.
Yep. Right at the bottom there.
Yeah, so you can automate it.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's essentially what I do. Yeah.
Yep.
So having those terminal commands and those low-level commands is nice. Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
It's also, you know, the Satya Nadella thing that I was griping about earlier, though, right? It's, you know, this is the company. They're going to embrace everything, you know, and this type of thing, you know, at the time when, say, PowerShell was being developed, I'm sure someone said, why don't we just, you know, bring this environment to Windows? And actually, there are Unix command lines for Windows, of course. And I don't think that the Microsoft of that day was capable of doing the Linux subsystem stuff. Not technically, but just, I don't know, what, morally or whatever. I don't know. You know,
they weren't ready.
They weren't ready for that, yeah.
Yeah. Morally.
I know, I'm sorry.
They weren't morally capable.
I don't want to put cancer in Windows.
How about just a little cancerous layer?
Right. I'm listening.
So Google got in a little bit of heat for pushback anyway from users because they were going to change Chrome.
They proposed that they were, yeah.
Was it Chromium or Chrome?
Chromium.
Yeah, I guess in order to make a change like this to Chrome, they'd have to do it in Chromium, the open source layer.
And this is the manifest thing that impacted ad blockers, you mean?
Yeah, it was going to basically block ad blockers, and that pissed people off.
But Google insists that the point was not to block ad blockers, right? But all of the major makers of ad blockers said, actually, if you make these changes, our products aren't going to work anymore.
It really was for security.
Yes, but one of the things that it's not just ad blockers, I should say. There's other kinds of content blockers too, but specifically like anti-tracking extensions and so forth. One of the biggest issues with the changes was that the extensions would no longer be able to cross probably site boundaries or whatever so that they couldn't basically track trackers.
I suspect to prevent cross-site scripting, which is a big security issue.
But what it looks like, because it's Google, is Google makes most of its money from ads.
By the way.
Obviously, it behooves Google not to block ads. We're not going to let you block ads. It's nice watching another company fall for this stuff.
Didn't this whole thing, it set off all the speculation like, no, so Microsoft's going to have to fork the Chromium Edge thing, right? Because they can't do this, right?
I was asked about this Friday. I do that weekly Q&A thing. And, you know, there's a lot of, it's amazing. It's really funny to me that there are Microsoft guys that don't trust Google. It's like, where did you come from? You're a Microsoft fan. Do you have no idea what this company did? I mean, it's kind of classic, you know, but, you know, today there were people complaining about the Nest device that had a secret microphone in it. And it's like, well, of course they do. You know, we weren't using that to spy on you. And you know what? Of course they weren't, not really, but I mean, it's Google. So now they're
just
instantly.
It looks bad if you do that on your Google.
Yeah.
Google has a beautiful way of walking into this stuff. They're great. But anyway, they have, they've basically listened to the complaints. Ghostry, I think it was, wrote this amazing white paper where they examined Google's claims for the changes, which had to do with both security and performance. And what they found is like, what I think most people would say is actually, if you block ads, the browser performs more quickly because it's not loading as much stuff.
And it's much more secure because you don't have this.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, even Microsoft has delivered malware via ads on its own website. I mean,
there's an analog here. I'm going to give you the analog of Microsoft changing the ability for programs to hook into the kernel and operate at ring zero. And remember, antivirus companies bitched and moaned because Microsoft said, but for security reasons, we can't let you be doing this. And so that's – but that's a real –
You know, the flip side of that, by the way, was when they moved the graphics subsystem for Windows NT into the kernel. Which was something they insisted no one should ever do.
Mistake, yeah.
And it was because for performance reasons, right?
Right. But my point being that Google says, well, you know, because of cross-site scripting, we can't allow you to look into these other processes. You don't own them. It's very similar. Yeah. And yes, it inhibits the ability of ad blockers to work, but it's also makes things more secure. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is. I could see this both sides of the story.
I think what's going to happen, obviously there'll be a new manifest with V3, whatever they call it. It will have something in it that addresses the security part of it. But it looks like, I mean, in Google's defense, they literally released this as a proposal.
Yeah.
They said, guys, this is what we're thinking. Give us feedback.
Yeah.
No, it was never going to just happen. And the feedback was entirely negative. And they said, okay, we're not going to do it.
Right.
I mean, that's the way you want the process to work. And you know, Richard raised this issue last week. My readers, I'm sure Mary Jo's as well, have raised it with us in the past when they first announced this Edge thing on Chromium, which is, you know, what happens when Google just says no to some Microsoft proposal and goes its own route, and what can they do?
Right.
Microsoft, that is. And, you know, this is one of those, this is part of the weirdness of them announcing this without ever having talked to Google in the first place. It seems like something you might want to, I know it's an open source project, but I mean, there is a weirdness to the fact that every single maintainer is a Google employee.
Yeah, that's the problem, frankly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll change with Edgium or whatever we call it.
Edgium. Yes. It's better than Credge.
Well, I was liking Credge for a while.
Credge.
Credge.
It's what's for breakfast.
In a related note, Google's no longer concerned about Cortana.
Yeah. I think it was CNBC that found this, but I didn't see it until almost over a week later. But when Google released its 10K or 10Q form with their most recent quarterly earnings, CNBC was kind of looking through it, and they have a section about competition, and they talk about all their competitors. By the way, one competitor they never mention is Apple and iOS. Like, they don't actually mention smartphone competitors, which is kind of strange, but they list competitors like Microsoft and Amazon are cloud competitors. And for the smart speaker category and for digital assistants, I think was how they described it, they said that Amazon and Apple were their competitors, not Microsoft. And what CNBC did was they found the same form from a year earlier, and Microsoft was on the list a year earlier. And, you know, related to this, there was strategic analytics came out with their report about smart speaker sales in the fourth quarter. Obviously, Microsoft doesn't even register on this list, but in smart speakers specifically, which is just a subset, I guess, of the assistant market, you know, Apple, their share of the market actually fell year over year. The HomePod was released a year ago and had a bigger share of the market last year than it does now, even though they sold more units because the market has expanded so dramatically. So there are three, they're not all Chinese. I guess two Chinese companies and a Japanese, Alibaba is Japanese, right?
Yeah, Chinese. No, it's Chinese.
Oh, it is Chinese. Okay, yeah. So there are three Chinese firms below Amazon and then Google, but they all have single digit share, and then Apple is 4.1%, something like that. So Apple rated you know, in that market, which makes sense because it's on the phone and so forth. But Microsoft does not.
Are you surprised? I mean,
no. But it's always interesting when it's called out like that. You know, I the reason I it's good data because you can point to this. We've been talking about this for a long time. I mean, probably 2 years ago, Brad and I went to CS, talked to the Cortana guys, Ryan, Gavin, I think it was. A lot of stories about how great everything was going to be. Nothing happened. You know, last year, it was Rich Woods had the same conversation with a different guy because there's churn over there. Same thing. Everything's going to be great. We're still working on speakers. We're doing this. And then this year kind of rolls around. It's like, Cortana's something else now. Mm-hmm. And this just kind of is another evidence point to the Cortana narrative, you know, which is that the tip of the Titanic is sticking out of the water, but that's about it.
Maybe they're going to consider them the same way that Amazon does, which is it's a partner for them for Alexa. So maybe a partner, right? For their whole
partnerships are not always equal.
They're not.
you know, Microsoft as a technology supplier to customers is one kind of a partnership. Two companies that share intellectual property or whatever are using each other's solutions in some capacities, kind of an equal partnership. But the Amazon partnership is very one-sided, I think. I don't think Amazon needs or wants a lot from Microsoft, frankly.
Visual Studio 2019 is coming April 2nd. I love VS Code. How much is VS Code is Visual Studio? Is it just like a little is it like just the editor part of Visual Studio?
I don't think they're actually that related at all.
Oh, okay. I think they're completely separate.
Yeah, it's possible that some
Mac, it's great.
Yes, VS Code is very consistent across platforms, which I like. So if you were to use it on Linux or on Windows, you would feel right at home. I mean, it's exactly the same. Full Visual Studio is a different, it's a very different thing, and it's a much bigger thing.
Yeah, and Visual Studio for Mac isn't the same thing either, right?
Oh, really?
Isn't that just Xamarin rebranded or something?
Yeah, it's Xamarin Studio.
Oh, it's Xamarin. Yeah. It is. Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Yep.
But if you care about Visual Studio for Windows and all the things they're doing with Visual Studio for mobile and AI and all that stuff, April 2nd is your day.
When was so this is at least the second time that they've done what I would call a virtual launch event. The language, I don't know if you've read you wrote about it, obviously. We're talking about it. But if you look at the Microsoft post, there's a thing. It's like, here's the schedule. Scott Hanselman's going to talk. We're going to have sessions about all the new language features and the new product features. And then stick around for the party afterwards. Was funded
virtual
by some
party.
Company. What's the party? I could afford to fund this. No one's getting any drinks. We're all in our own houses.
Maybe they can ship us all some drinks and we can party.
Yeah, exactly. What are you going to ship me? Ship me a case of wine or something so I can partake in the party. When was the last time, do you remember, that there was actually like an in-person live? Didn't they used to do something called VS Live? Was that the...
No, VS Live was another company's event. That's not Microsoft.
But they used to do live launches.
Yeah, they used to have Visual Studio launches all the time, like in where you'd go to a place and it would be a thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But now it's funny. Even though Microsoft is still very much focused on developers, and I don't think they're abandoning the developer market in any way, but they're really trying to de-emphasize it, right? I mean, like, they really look at that Connect event this year. That used to be an in-person event here in New York, and all the executives would come and all the MVPs would come, and now it's more like, that's a virtual event too. And we're doing ASP.NET and we're doing Visual Studio and we're doing all this stuff, but that's just like a thing we do over here, and come back over here and look at AI instead. Like if you want to talk about AI for developers, we're all in. But if you want to talk about like languages and
The kind of meat and potato stuff.
Yeah, they don't want to talk about that really anymore.
Do they ever talk about, I know every once in a while you see a number that describes the size of the Microsoft developer base, but I suspect that sometime in the future, not too far, the user base for VS Code will be bigger than that for straight up Visual Studio, right? Because it addresses what is, I assume, is a much bigger market. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that kind of becomes Visual Studio for most people. Mm-hmm. And maybe that explains the virtual thing. I don't know. It's the way that part of the world does things anyway. Everything, it's just a download and.
Right. Again, anything to do with Windows is kind of like, okay, we do Windows still, but we don't really want to talk about it. But what's in VS 2019? We should mention that because there's some pretty good features in it that we've seen in the previews. That Visual Studio Live Share coding collaboration service now becomes a default part of the product, for one. And you know how many developers complain about, it takes forever to start a project or to get going? They're introducing a whole new way that you can get right into your projects more quickly and get going more quickly. That'll be part of it with the new start window. What else? They've got some things around support for .NET Core 3, including WinForms and WPF. And then, of course, if you're an AI person, the Python virtual Anaconda support. Key.
Might have to do, I guess, obviously there's a build developer conference happening and
right,
a little under 3 months now. Yeah. you know, whatever new initiatives they have. I asked you the other day about Azure Sphere, for example, right? And we kind of collectively determined that this thing is probably still, it's still in preview. There's been no real public discussion of it, but what happens over the previous year is there are different versions of the APIs that get released and capabilities are added and so forth. And I think Build in some ways is a bigger event because it's not so much about the tool, which evolves, but about these new APIs and language versions and so forth, which can kind of happen outside of the actual product, you know, the development product. Although I guess technically the languages do happen with Visual Studio. I think they do.
Yeah. So if you're a dev, April 2nd, put it on your calendar, sign up for the event. Party live and virtually
bring your own
with
beer.
Everyone.
Yeah, party virtually with everybody. It's just like being on Twitter with slightly less hate.
Hopefully a lot less hate.
Yes, hopefully a lot less, yeah.
I think we can go to the back of the book unless you guys have discovered other stories to talk about.
So far, no Windows build. We all thought right, it might happen at
this has been the curiously slow week.
That's okay. It's fine with me. We're going to do the Samsung Galaxy event in about 40 minutes. A reminder before we get to the back of the book that our yearly Twitch survey is coming to a close, and we want to get everybody who listens to respond if we can, not because we're collecting information about you personally, but just in aggregate, we like to know more about our audience. Helps us sell the network, which helps us monetize the network, which helps keep shows on the air, but it also helps us decide what shows to do next. If you would like to take the Twit survey, it's only a few minutes, just a few questions, but it's very helpful to us. Go to twit.to/survey19, our annual survey of our audience. twit.to/survey19 and thank you in advance for doing that. Now, Paul,
by the way,
what?
Real quick, though, there is one Microsoft story we didn't really touch on that I looked at this morning and decided not to write about because I feel like the press around it was a little deceptive. But basically, this notion that Microsoft had kind of come out and saw evidence of tampering in elections in Europe last year, or the last 2 years, whatever it was, and that Russia was behind it and this Russian hacking group and so forth. And when I looked at it, what I found was that, yeah, you know, Microsoft did mention issues with political party hacking and so forth in Europe. But really what this was a chance to sell a Microsoft product and B, a follow-up of a similar post that they had made probably, I don't know if it was last April or August, about this happening in the United States. And at that time, they actually did literally blame Russia and a Russian hacking group that is close ties to Russian intelligence and to Vladimir Putin. But this time they never mentioned either of those things. And so I kind of took it as more of an ad for Microsoft. I think it's called, was it AdGuard or whatever. And so the more I kind of looked at it, the more I thought, well, this is just, you know, I mean, whatever, nothing happened. Like, it's not like something happened last week and Microsoft is saying, hey, we found this evidence of something terrible happening in Europe. It was more like a follow-up to something that happened last year, but maybe I'm a little off base. You didn't write about that, did you, Mary Jo?
No, I did not.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Well, then there's nothing to see here. Move along.
Well, I'm not saying there's nothing to see here, but I didn't see any particularly, you know, timely news to it or whatever. Yeah.
Let's start with your tip of the week, Mr. Thrott.
This one is timely. So right now, Microsoft has long had this deal where you can get a month of Xbox Game Pass for $1 or $2, depending on the time. And so if you've not subscribed to the service, that's always available. But if you haven't done it yet, you actually get 2 months now. So 2 months for $2, at which point it would automatically subscribe you to the monthly plan unless you tell it not to, is an incredible deal for 2 months of service, obviously. But this is a good time to do it because Crackdown 3 just came out. And Crackdown 3 is part of that subscription. And Crackdown 3 is, I would say it's gotten mixed reviews or whatever. But that's a good excuse not to spend $60 on the game and to spend $2. And then you could play the game for a month or two, finish it, and be done with it. So that's kind of a neat thing to do if you haven't yet, is get those 2 months. And then the other related tip, I guess, this is almost turned into the Xbox segment, is Xbox One is often on sale. I think the last time they had a sale, which was probably, a month ago, 5 weeks ago, whatever it was, I made the comment that you should never, ever buy an Xbox One S or X at full price. They're always on sale. And they are on sale again. Most of the bundles are $50 off. Actually, the Fortnite bundle, I think it is for the Xbox One X, is $100 off. But the other thing that's interesting here is I believe this Game Pass sale is related to this. There are other things Xbox that are on sale, including a selection of Xbox wireless controllers, including some really nice ones that are all $10 off right now as well. So if for some reason you're watching the show or listening to this and you don't own an Xbox, you might want to look at it again because these are good prices. And then what else do we have? And then I have two app picks. The first, it was from a listener, actually a Windows Weekly viewer. Lori Baranowski emailed me when I was talking about screenshotting. I think I was talking about the new screen clip feature that's coming in the next version of Windows 10. And I mentioned that I often have to Photoshop mouse cursors into images and that I do that manually because sometimes it's a little more precise, whatever. But she recommended a free and open source screenshotting app for Windows I'd never heard of called GreenShot. And it includes mouse cursor support. It also includes the ability to override all of the print screen type keyboard shortcuts you use today to use screenshots. And it's awesome. Like, I'm actually going to use this going forward and I'm using it now. I mean, and the way I have this thing set up is when you hit print screen, it captures the screen. Or it gives you, depending on how you have it configured. I have it configured to capture the screen, but you can have it configured to choose what to capture. And then you could decide what to do with it. So you can save the file. You could copy to the clipboard. It's actually really, really versatile. And it's small and fast. And it's free. So this is an awesome tool. If you are,
this is great.
Especially for people who need something more than a basic screen grab. You know, I often, for books or for the site stuff, I want to have the cursor in there. It's a really, really cool tool. So I have probably talked about a million screenshot tools, but this one's, it's awesome. And it's better than the last one I'd used a store app before. I think it was called, what was that called? ScreenX or something like that, which is pretty good, but it's convoluted. The UI is terrible. Every time you reinstall it, you have to go and figure out, you know, how to change it back to the way it was. This one is actually a much, much better product. It's really small. And the other one, this is kind of, you know, this is one of those things that's always out in the periphery. You know, there's all these kind of open source, you know, office suites back in the day, like the Star Office stuff and Open Office and all the different variants of that. And then more recently, with the move to the web, we see lots of cloud-based office productivity suites, obviously G Suite and Office 365 are versions. But then there's this thing called Zoho Suite, which is for individuals, small businesses, enterprises, whatever. And if you're a business, you pay for it. But as an individual, you can get them for free. And they have really good word processor, spreadsheet, presentation, and note-taking apps on the web. They're not actually PWAs, but they can work offline. So you can use them as apps. And they're free. If you're an individual, you can use these things for free. I think the note-taking app is also available in a mobile app form on probably iOS and Android both. They're surprisingly good. And I'm not going to switch them or anything. I'm kind of, you know, I'm in my own little Microsoft worldview here. But if you don't like paying for Office 365 or I don't want to pay for G Suite or whatever, these tools are free. And like I said, you should check them out. They're surprisingly
nice.
They're
all browser-based, right?
The four main apps are, and then based on what I write that I can see in front of me, yes, the Zoho notebook, which is there.
Paul,
their
what is it? App. What?
Yeah,
I see a paragraph.
I can't remember
here.
What I wrote last week, Leo.
I try to show you your notes.
Yeah. Well, but Paul, you said
I really like Zoho Office. I don't know why I don't mention it more often. It really is.
I don't know if it's possible to do this, but if it's like you. These apps are really pretty. Like, they're really modern looking. And so actually, you can see in that shot there, the middle picture, that toolbar, that kind of thing on the left, is not always displayed. You can toggle it. But that's actually a really good use of screen real estate, right? Because most of us have wider
screens.
So it's like a bunch of empty space anyway. So rather than taking up, vertical space, I guess, put it over on the side.
They also have a really good development platform for database.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And I've been really toying with doing, because we use an Azure-based system that Jeff Needles wrote for our ad sales. And it breaks a lot. And I've often thought it'd probably be worth rewriting this in Zoho, but never get
not in DBase 3+.
Well, that would have been my choice until this came
out. Yeah, that was the other.
I've written many a DBase application.
Sure.
For business. Delphi guys.
Well, that's what made me think of it, because Paul's the Delphi expert.
He is.
Yeah. What is this Delphi you speak of?
Yeah. What is the name of this?
I couldn't write a line of Delphi code today if my life depended on it.
Oh, it'd come back to you. It's like riding a bike. It's like
riding a bike.
I tell you what, yeah. I have a copy of the Delphi 3 Super Bible if you ever ever need anything. And now.
It all descends from T object, Leo. I remember that.
It's Turbo Pascal, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Or
yeah.
That was
Object Pascal.
Object Pascal. Pascal. Sorry.
And now, Turbo Pascal.
Turbo. And now, Matty Jo Foley's Enterprise Pick of the Week.
My Enterprise pick today is SACT, also known by some of us as SACT. What is SACT? Semi-annual channel targeted. If you're an IT pro, you know that acronym all too well. It's one of the things you often have waited for before applying a new Windows 10 feature update. You waited for that SACT designation to drop. Well, you're not going to be doing that anymore, IT pros. As of build 1903 coming out this spring, Microsoft's getting rid of SACT completely. So people who have Windows Update for Business, who have Configuration Manager, Windows Server Update Services, you're not going to see that anymore. Now you're just supposed to start piloting the new Windows 10 feature update when it comes out, which has been the policy, kind of the unwritten policy for a while, but now it's the official policy.
Oh boy.
If you would like to get an excellent and funny take on what is happening with SACT being sacked, I am going to refer you to a blog by someone named Brian Dam, D-A-M. He writes a blog called Damn Good Admin, damgoodadmin.com. And he has a very excellent and thorough take on what this means, who needs to worry, who doesn't need to worry when this happens, what you're going to have to do if you're an IT pro, and what you will not have to do if you're an IT pro when this happens. So check out his blog, Brian Dam, Damn Good Admin, for more on SACT.
And as if that were not enough, you have Enterprise Pick of the Week number 2.
I do. And this came out in a very quiet way, but it's something that everyone who's still running Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 and 2008 R2 need to know about.
Steve Gibson because picked up your story, and he was hoping you'd talk about it today. We talked about it yesterday. Yeah, it's a big deal.
So, yeah, it is it's a good thing, but it's something you need to know. So the SHA-2 algorithm is going to be required if you're running Windows 7 Service Pack 1, Windows Server 2008, or 2008 R2 as of July 16th this year. If you don't have that on your device, you're not going to get any more Windows updates, even though Microsoft is still supporting those operating systems till next year. The reason they're doing this, they say it's for your own good, that SHA-1 is insecure and you need to have support for SHA-2. The way they're going to introduce this, though, is by a patch. So you have to make sure you apply the patch. They're going to be rolling this out starting in March over time. They have a whole blog post explaining how it will be rolled out. And so you just have to make sure, if you want to keep getting especially your security updates for those operating systems, you have the SHA-2 patch on your machines. It's complicated. Yeah, it's a complicated timeline. If you're running Windows 10, you don't have to do anything at all. They're just going to automatically make sure you're up to date with SHA-2. But if you're running the older versions like 7 and 2008, you have to care.
I presume, maybe you wouldn't notice, though, that you're not getting updates. I mean, maybe you just...
When Patch Tuesday happens and nothing you don't happens. Get anything.
Hey, good, they fixed it all. Okay.
Well, yeah, it's working. That's why I want to stay on Windows 7. It doesn't need any patches.
No patches necessary. Yeah. How do you upgrade to SHA-2? Is there a simple...
I think what they're going to do is just... They're rolling it out as a patch.
Okay. So you'll get the patch that makes you get future patches.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a so patch that enables more patches.
Some people are blocking. Some people block patches, or they wait a certain amount of time for them to.
Yeah.
If you happen to block this one after the middle of July, you'll just stop getting Windows updates. So, yeah.
Good. Now, hard to believe, but you've hardly worked at all on this show, but you're still getting beer.
Yes, and you're getting a good beer. You're getting a beer called Toppling Goliath Pseudo Sue. Did you know what Pseudo Sue was? I didn't know what this was.
What is Pseudo Sue?
The largest T-Rex fossil ever discovered.
Oh, wow.
That's Sussudio?
Sussudio.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Phil Collins.
Why pseudo, though?
I don't know. I don't know why. But this is from a brewery in Iowa called Toppling Goliath, which I had never heard of, but they're very famous and very well respected. And now we're starting to get their beers out here on the East Coast, which is super exciting if you're a beer drinker. This one is an American Pale Ale, 6.2%, so not too high in alcohol. And I had one recently. It's very smooth, well-balanced. It's hoppy, but not like over-hopped, not too bitter. It's just a really nice drinking beer, and I'm looking forward to more Toppling Goliath hitting the Big Apple.
And now, was the Sioux skeleton from Idaho?
Now, if you Google Pseudo Sue trying to figure out why they called her Pseudo Sue, all you get is beer. They've totally.
I think the Tyrannosaurus was just called Sue. I think.
Yeah, you're right. It was called Sue.
Oh,
the largest
okay.
T-Rex specimen.
So it's Pseudo Sue because it's beer.
Yeah,
not
there you
a
go.
T-Rex fossil.
Not a T-Rex.
Okay.
It's not T-Rex juice.
They didn't call the T-Rex Pseudo Sue. They
brewed with the bones of the largest.
Yeah, she's in Sue is in the Field Museum.
Ah, nice.
In Chicago.
Yeah, in Chicago.
Yeah.
But where was she found? Where was the skeleton from?
I'm looking right now. They bought it from the woman who found it for $8.3 million, the highest amount ever paid for a dinosaur fossil. It was found, in western South Dakota. Not near at all.
Not really.
I don't know.
Did Sue live in Iowa? Was there an Iowa connection?
Maybe. It was found by Sue Hendrickson, an explorer and fossil collector. Maybe she's from Iowa.
Maybe. Iowa. Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. She was born in Chicago.
It has a dinosaur on the can, guys.
She moved to Munster. She's from Munster, Indiana. I don't know.
Okay. It's a Midwestern thing. We wouldn't understand.
We wouldn't understand. Giant T-Rex beer. That's all you need to know.
Exactly.
Pseudo Sue.
She probably opened the can with that little tiny finger she has.
It's very hard to drink with those little arms. Ladies and gentlemen, what a deal. This has been so much fun. Thank you, Paul and Mary Jo, for allowing me to move your show a little bit to get out of the way of Samsung, of all people.
Oh, don't forget about Sunday, Leo.
Sunday, Mary Jo and I will be, I'll be getting up early. It'll be, again, noon your time. 9 a.m. Sunday, we will be covering the Microsoft HoloLens announcement. HoloLens 2.
We think it's the HoloLens.
HoloLens 4. No one knows what version. And maybe it isn't even HoloLens. Won't you and I be disappointed if we sit there for an hour?
Can you imagine? We're releasing a phone.
It's a vision. Well, if it's a
phone.
Right,
it's another Satya Nadella vision keynote.
You'll hear me in the audience going, liar!
Paul will be there in Barcelona. It's Mobile World Congress. So we'll be looking for you. And Mary Jo, thank you, Mary Jo, will be joining me 9 a.m. Sunday Pacific. That's noon Eastern. And it's 1700 UTC if you want to. Tune in twit.tv/live. Samsung will stream it, of course. We will carry the stream, probably get taken off YouTube for it. I don't know. Yesterday, we got a YouTube strike for MacBreak Weekly.
Oh, really?
I don't know why, except maybe we're talking about the new YouTube strike system. How it was going to be more lenient.
Don't even know why they did it?
We played an Apple ad. You know, that new Apple ad about Bokeh, which was a great ad. And we were talking about it and commentating on
Sounds like fair use. Yeah,
it is absolutely fair use, and we're of course disputed the takedown on that.
Are they just screwing with you now? Is that
I think so. Still... We don't get that takedowns very often because YouTube knows that we're news.
Yeah. Right.
Well, the Microsoft one's going to be streamed on the Microsoft website.
Yeah. It will be, yeah.
That doesn't ever seem to help. Microsoft.
It doesn't? No? No,
Microsoft will just send you a thank you note for covering it.
You know, they should. We're covering it.
They should. Yeah, they should.
They're streaming it. Samsung's doing the same thing. Apple does the same thing. They all do the same thing. Apple took us down last time. So now we're trying to decide what to do. I don't.
It's crazy.
They took our live stream off for 2 weeks. For everything. This one's just a takedown of a show. But that one was taking down our entire live stream on YouTube Live. So what we may do on YouTube from future streams is send a special feed to YouTube. Just has us talking. I don't know what we're going to do. But Mary Jo, you will be here. We will have some fun on Sunday.
We will.
I can't wait. And of course, in about half an hour or 20 minutes, we're going to go to...
Assuming the snowpocalypse doesn't kill my internet connection.
I know. It's snowing really hard.
Is it? Is it really?
Yeah, it's pretty serious.
Wow.
You probably can't see it because of the glare, but it's probably too glary. Yeah,
it's very white. It's very white out there. It's a white out.
So I guess that's as good as it's going to get. Sorry.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. You'll find Mary Jo Foley at allaboutmicrosoft.com. It's her ZDNet blog. By the way, we had Lindsay Turrentine on the show on Sunday.
Oh, you did? Nice.
She is now VP in charge of all tech content at CBS Interactive, which includes ZDNet. Lindsay's great. I just adore her. Paul Thurrott, your boss, I guess, in name, if not in fact. Paul Thurrott has no boss.
Leo, if only that were true.
Yeah, Patrick Norton told me that. I said, I'm starting my own company so I don't have to answer to the man. He says, Leo, there's always a man. Mm-hmm. And he was right, except my man is a woman. But that's a story for another day. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, thurrogood.com. His books are at leanpub.com. And we will be back at our normal time next Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. 1900 UTC for Windows Weekly. I hope you'll tune in then. Otherwise, you can always get on-demand content at twit.tv/WW or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.